Well, so for me, my crowd I ran with, I guess, like, primarily I was a music nerd. I was in choir, show choir, carolers, all this stuff. I was in Trium Music Honor Society, which got me a really cool pink cord when I graduated. I was an athlete, but I wasn't, like, I didn't play the jockey sports. Like, I didn't play football. I played 1 year basketball, and I played varsity soccer and varsity tennis, which were not, like, the tough guy sports, at least back in that day. I grew up, I graduated high school in 04, so I was in high school from 2000 to 2004. And those were the days when, like, there was still this really stiff divide between football and soccer players. The football players did not like us. They had lots of unkind names for the soccer players. Little insight, we won way more games than they did, but they still picked on us and called us names, right? It wasn't nice of them, but they did that. And music was a little less at that time, but the sports thing was, like, it was this big deal. You kind of got picked on, right? But you had your jocks, you had your music nerds, got your theater geeks. You know, there were a ton of other ones, you know, the 4.0s, the perfect attendance, all this, right? You had all this going on, and that's all fine. And I kind of like what Sam is saying, that these hybrid groups kind of form. People kind of just from all different backgrounds and different interests hang out. But the fact is, there is one other kind of group or type of behavior that exists kind of within all of these groups that I don't like, and I think many of us probably have a problem with. That is the bullies. The bullies exist. They existed when I was younger. They exist now. And it's unfortunate, right? These are people that pick on others, that think they're better than other people, maybe take advantage of others, and honestly, just they kind of seem like jerks a lot. And we use bullies a lot in schools. We talk about it that way, but bully happens throughout our world, in the workplace and everything else, in culture, it's there. But the fact is, bullies exist, and they can be tough to deal with. That's kind of the point. But in today's Psalm, Psalm 10, David is going to write about somebody that he describes as wicked, and he outlines all the behavior of this person. And every time I read it, when I read it through multiple times, the word bully just kept coming to my mind. Like, that's what he is describing. The whole first half of the psalm, David's describing a bully. So what we're going to see today, thankfully, is that God stands up to bullies. God doesn't like bullies. God will stand up to bullies. So in our passage today, we're going to get some background on our bully. We're then going to see what David does in response to this behavior, and then why David's response is good, why it works. So those three things we'll look at. So we're going to start in Psalm 10. We're going to read verses 1 through 11 to get started. I'll read it. It'll be up here, or you can have it in your Bibles, and we're going to get the description of the bully that David is talking about. So let's read Psalm 10, verses 1 through 11. It says this, "Why, Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? In his arrogance, the wicked man hunts down the weak, who are caught in the schemes he devises. He boasts about the cravings of his heart. He blesses the greedy and reviles the Lord. In his pride, the wicked man does not seek him. In all his thoughts, there is no room for God. His ways are always prosperous. Your laws are rejected by him. He sneers at all his enemies. He says to himself, 'Nothing will ever shake me.' He swears, 'No one will ever do me harm.' His mouth is full of lies and threats. Trouble and evil are under his tongue. He lies in wait near the villages. From ambush, he murders the innocent. His eyes watch in secret for his victims. Like a lion in cover, he lies in wait. He lies in wait to catch the helpless. He catches the helpless and drags them off in his net. His victims are crushed. They collapse. They fall under his strength. He says to himself, 'God will never notice.' He covers his face and never sees." All right, so this is our background on our bullying. We're going to walk through here in just a minute about three things, I think, that kind of describe this bully. We don't have a lot of background on him. We're not sure who David's talking about. One thought is that this is a person that might actually believe in God because of the way David describes, like he believes but doesn't follow God. We're not sure, but that's one of the thoughts behind this person. But what I want to dive into is the description David gives. And the first thing in verses 2 through 4, the bully is arrogant. He's arrogant. Arrogant is a trait that if you want to pick one that drives me nuts, it's arrogance, right? Personally, this is one that really gets me. It's just like there are people that think they're that much better than somebody else and kind of full of themselves. Now, the bully, as described here by David, knows he can hurt or take advantage of the weak. He knows he can do this. He knows he's smarter than the weak person, that his schemes will work. So he knows that he can, in essence, trick them, take advantage of them. He knows this is going to work. And then he boasts about what he wants. It doesn't say what he wants, but these are going to be things probably like excess, power, control, things that he doesn't need, but just make himself feel better about himself and make him feel like, I have all of this stuff. And people like him are who he wants to associate with. He encourages and blesses those like him, other people that want to take advantage of the weak, right? This bully is kind of hanging out or wants to be with other people like him. And he also says he doesn't need God. He doesn't need him. He's got no time for him because he's too busy conniving on his own schemes, filling up everything he wants on his own. Whether he believes in God or not, he would say, I don't need God. I don't have time. I don't want to do what God would have me do. I don't need to. I got this all figured out on my own. So to start off with, he's arrogant. He's someone that's fairly smart, knows it, and uses it against others, and so far is having no pushback in any of his ways. All right, see, I'm already a little riled up about this guy, and we're just getting started. All right, verses 5 through 6. I would describe him here, and the best word I came up with is he's a winner because nothing seems to go against him, right? He's prosperous. Maybe that's a better word, too, but I think winner. He rejects God's ways, but doesn't seem to be negatively affected by it. There's no judgment yet, no punishment coming his way. He gets away with it, and he's on top. He'll fight back at anyone that opposes him, and he wins. He doesn't get rattled. He feels safe in who he is and what he's doing. It's that kind of person that seems like everything just goes their way all the time. So he's arrogant. He constantly wins. And finally, he's violent, verses 7 through 10. He's violent. First off, in his speech, he doesn't care how he talks to other people. He will utter threats. He'll utter lies. He'll talk in anger. He'll talk in abusive ways. It doesn't matter to him. He'll talk however he wants to talk. And then he's violent in action. It says he sneaks up and preys on others, like a lion hiding in wait, it says. So he's kind of watching for the vulnerable, the weak. And then he attacks knowing he can overpower them, knowing he can crush them, knowing that they can't come out from underneath him. He knows he overpowers them. So he's arrogant, he's prosperous or a winner, and he's violent. And then in verse 11, he believes God will not see him. Now, whether that's God will see it and forget, or God just doesn't see it and doesn't care, this is what's in his mind. So he's doing all this thinking, I can get away with it all. I have no concern for any action because I'm not getting any consequences. And this can be super hard to see, right? If we think about it, we have seen this type of behavior happen. I looked up what bullying actually would mean. A bully would be, according to a definition, a blustering, mean, or predatory person who from a perceived position of relative power intimidates, abuses, harasses, or coerces people, especially those considered unlikely, to defend themselves. This is what I would describe as behavior that makes me go, ugh, because it's frustrating, right? I don't want to see people picked on for being weak or people taken advantage of. All right, go back to any time in your life you feel like maybe you were picked on or demeaned. It's not okay. It's frustrating. It shouldn't happen. My kids are, how old are they now? 6 and almost 3. All right, Jeremiah's going into first grade, and I love it. But I know at some point he will get picked on. I'm not looking forward to it. I'm going to go into full-fledged angry dad mode. I guarantee it. Because, no, you do not pick on my kid, but it'll happen, whether it's for some way he likes to play, something he likes. But it's so hard because I want him to just be able to be who he is. I want the person in this psalm to just be who they is, but the bully keeps picking on them. It's not okay. This bully is somebody that will demean somebody else, take advantage of them, hurt them, and crush them. You put that all together, and this is, like I said, angry dad mode, or like inner Hulk wanting to come out and take care of this. And the problem is if you're in this mode like I am, you see this, and you just want to wonder, man, does God really care? Because it keeps happening, because we see it, and it doesn't end right away. So it's tempting to start to think, are the bully's boastful claims true? These true about the fact that, well, God doesn't see or doesn't care. It creeps into the mind. Is that true? Because it's still happening. And then we take our beliefs, the things we believe about God, our hopes in God, our moral beliefs and our faith, but they come into conflict with the reality we see in the world. Because we have a God of love, peace, and justice, but our world and reality is full of hate, violence, and oppression. This is the ultimate tension. So how? What the heck? Because the bullies keep seem to win. And this drives me nuts. I had a hard time writing this one, I'll be honest, because I'm just like, no, this shouldn't happen. It can be tempting to go right up to the bully and tell them off. I understand. Run into action. It can be tempting to go up and hit them with that holy left hook. Tempting. Okay. Thankfully, that might be my first response. Thankfully, David is smarter than I am and gives us the better response. It gets better. Don't worry. We talked about the bully. We're going to get a little better here. Psalm 10, 12 through 15. Let's take a read at what David's response is. He says, "Arise, Lord, lift up your hand, O God. Do not forget the helpless. Why does the wicked man revile God? Why does he say to himself, 'He won't call me to account'? But you, God, you see the trouble of the afflicted. You consider their grief and take it in hand. The victims commit themselves to you. You are the helper of the fatherless. Break the arm of the wicked man. Call the evildoer to account for his wickedness that would not otherwise be found out." David teaches us to go to God. Ask him to intercede. Now, if you've heard me speak before, probably close to every week, I say, hey, you need to go to God. Guess what? I'm going to keep saying it because it's always a response. Always going to God, even if it seems like he hasn't answered or hasn't seemed like he's been listening. And David goes on. He's like, he's almost venting it to God, being like, God, arise, do something. I don't get why this guy can do what he does. Why does he revile you? Why doesn't he think that you're going to call him to account on this? It doesn't make sense. Why is he so opposed to you? Why doesn't he think he's going to be judged? But then he gives us the reminder that God always sees what is happening. It says, "You, God, see the trouble of the afflicted. You consider their grief and take it in hand." Oh, sorry, that's not the, yeah, it is. That's the right verse. He does it. He takes it. God will do it. He puts to bed the notion that God isn't paying attention or doesn't see what is happening. He puts this all to bed. God does see it. So he starts there and says, God, I know you're going to see what's happening to this afflicted person. But then he says, break the arm of the wicked man. Meaning, not physically knock him down and break his arm, but break this guy's power. Put him in his place. Now, call him to account. Seek out this wicked man, this bully. Bring everything he has done to light. Bring it all up until there is nothing left. This seems to be David asking for a more earthly punishment, something to happen now. I don't think this would be like an eternal condemnation type of punishment that David's asking for. I think he's like, right now, God, do something about it. Now, in this situation, we don't know how this story ended. We don't know if whoever David is referring to comes to account. But the fact is, David has a great response because he goes to God to intercede for the weak against the bully. He goes to God to intercede in the right way. We're going to do a little visual to demonstrate the importance of this because we all love a good visual. Ryan's going to come on up. Ryan's been sweating this visual for a while. This is Ryan. If you haven't met, Ryan's going to come over here. And we have a few things we're going to do today. This is African hot sauce.
This is a terrible idea.
This is going to be great. This is a chip. What Ryan's going to do is Ryan is going to eat some of this hot sauce, and we're going to gauge Ryan's response. And we're going to take a shocking guess as to what is going to happen. So here goes Ryan. A nice big dip. Just get it in there. Sam says this is his favorite sermon so far. Yeah, here we go. Eat that. Get that all over there. Nice and spicy. How are we feeling? It's got any zing to it? Starting to get zingy. He's sweating. The hot sauce is bullying the weakness of his palate. Now we have to intercede. We have to do something. The first thought is right here. Is water a good idea? No, water is a terrible idea, so don't do the first one. We go. Here you go. I brought you something. You go to the milk. Ryan can drink. Oh, he's going for more. Ryan's going to fight back against the bully. He's going to regret this, though. He's going to regret this. So we're going to go to the milk to help. Yeah, that was a really bad idea. That was a really bad play on your part. How are we doing now? He's better. He's better. So the hot sauce was destroying his poor mouth, but now the milk helps out. You can sit down whenever you're ready. Anybody else want to try some hot sauce? Go ahead. Yeah, you might want to take the milk. You can take the chips, too, if you want. It was very good. It was very good. I'm going to give this to Sam. Sam's good? Okay. Let's get that out of my way. All right, so the point here is this. Now, yeah, I know that was silly, but the point is this. There was something attacking and going at something weaker. The hot sauce went at Ryan's mouth. It made it hot. We needed to intercede. The first impulse might be to grab the water, but that's a bad idea. We had to intervene in the right way with the milk. God is like the milk to the hot sauce, okay? That's kind of what we're getting at. Sam, put that on a t-shirt. All right? So we have to go to God because God's going to be the right way to deal with this. Whether we have to go to God on our own behalf, if we're the one being bullied, or we have to go to God on behalf of someone else, we have to go with God. What else do we need to do about this? The response is also, don't ignore those that need help, those that are weak, those that are being taken advantage of, those that are susceptible to being taken advantage of. Be aware of the people around you. Don't be blind to it. And then have confidence that God sees and that God hears, and he will act on his timing. Right? God sees it and he hears it. Even if it's happening, God knows that it's happening and he will deal with it. I don't know how he's going to deal with it. It might be through you. He might put you into action. It might be through somebody else. It might be through some other way, but God will indeed stand up to that bully and deal with it. So the response is to go to God for the weak, and to also go to God about the bullies, to go to God. You say, okay, but if God hasn't been listening, I'm still supposed to go to him? Yes. And David gives us the end here in Psalm 10, 16 through 18. He gives us the confidence in God. So let's read the final part here, 16 through 18. It says this, "The Lord is king forever and ever. The nations will perish from his land. You, Lord, hear the desire of the afflicted. You encourage them. You listen to their cry, defending the fatherless and the oppressed so that mere mortals will never strike again in terror." The confidence comes from the fact that God is the forever king. God is the eternal king. Our earthly bully cannot defeat our heavenly and eternal king. It won't happen. So David's saying God is king forever. The bully doesn't overtake that. And then I love verse 17 because it says, "You, Lord, you hear the desire of the afflicted. You hear, you encourage them, and you listen to their cry." God doesn't just, in essence, pick up the person that's hurting, do the whole pull them up by the bootstraps and say, "Rub some dirt on it, kid, and get back out there." That's not what it says he does. He's really there for them because he hears, he listens, and he encourages. He's got power to deal with all this, but the patience to just be with the person that needs him. Don't lose that part. It says, "God will side with the afflicted or the weak against those who take advantage of them. He'll defend those who cannot defend themselves, the most needy." In essence, he's going to be that protective father, right? In David's day, this would have been, the father would have been the one responsible for protecting his children. So he's saying, you're the father to the fatherless. You protect the weak that don't have a way to protect themselves. And then people won't strike again after God intercedes. God is eternal, and God will put it down because God is stronger. I see this as God is the true winner. The true winner here. When he stands up to bullies, God is the true winner. I love thinking about the idea of the winners because then I can go to sports. If you know me, I like to talk about food, obviously, and sports. My two favorite things. Ultimate winner in my book, Michael Jordan. Anybody? Basketball fans? Know Michael Jordan? Okay. If you don't, quick synopsis. He's won 6 NBA championships and 5 most valuable players. Highly regarded as one of the best basketball players of all time. I think he is. Some will disagree, but he is. And he has this quote that I absolutely love from him. And it says this, "I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've lost almost 300 games. 26 times I've been trusted to take the game-winning shot and missed. I failed over and over again in my life, and that is why I succeed. He talks about all the shots he's missed, all the times he's lost. He's still known as the GOAT, the greatest of all time, the best, a winner, but he even says he's failed, he's missed, yet he's still considered a great winner. Guess what? God doesn't miss. God doesn't miss. God is a greater winner than Michael Jordan. God wins. God's on the side of the weak, the oppressed, the beaten down, the taken advantage of. The hard part with this, I think, is it might seem like God's not winning because he works on his own timing. He doesn't play by the clock that we have. He's got his own. So what we need to take from this is trust in God's timing. This applies in many ways, but specifically in regards to when God acts. We've all had to wait on God's timing in our lives. Most of us have. But when God acts, it is on his time. And we see somebody that needs help, and we want to help right away, and we might be supposed to. But God's going to do it on his timing. Remember, God does see and hear. He knows this is happening. His seeming inaction doesn't mean he's absent. He's still present. He's still listening. God will defend the weak. He may ask you to help out in some way. He may have somebody else help out, but God will stand up to the bully. So this week, what are we kind of taking? What do we want to do? First off, be aware of what's going on around you. Be aware. Be aware of the weak, the afflicted, the oppressed, the marginalized, the people that can be or are being taken advantage of. It is not okay for them to be preyed upon. It's not okay for them to be taken advantage of, to stop being blind or numb to it. And it can be tempting to think this doesn't happen if it's never really happened to you directly. But the fact is, it does happen. And it can look messy, it can look hard. So we want to turn away sometimes and not see it. But we're not supposed to. We want to see it. And when we do, go to God to figure out how we can help. Ask God how you can help. Do you hold a position, some influence, or anything that might allow you to help out? Or is just going to God what you need to do? Maybe you're just supposed to be there for the person that's being taken advantage of. But ask God how you can help. And then remember, bullies do exist. As much as I would like to say they don't or that they didn't, this behavior does. But God does hear and see what is happening, and God will stand up to the bullies, and he is on the side of the people being bullied. God will stand up for his people. Let's pray. God, I thank you again for this psalm. God, even at the beginning, how it's hard to hear about this behavior, God, to hear about people being taken advantage of and treated so poorly. But God, I thank you for the response that David gives, the response to go to you, to remember that you see and you hear and that you have power, God, that you have strength to win in this situation, God, to stand up to the bully, to stand up for the people that need you. And God, I thank you that you hear, you see, and you encourage, God, that you are there, not just to fight, God, but to be there for the people that need you. So I pray this week, God, that we would see what's going on around us, God. We would see the people that are in need of your strength, God, in need of you being the father to the fatherless, God, or the one that takes their struggle in your hands. God, I pray that we would see them and we would come to you for it, and you would put on our hearts and our minds what you would have us do to help, God. And we thank you. In your name, amen.